Welcome, investigator. Evil is on the rise. Crime is escalating. Our mission is to eliminate the crime by exposing evil, examine why it manifests, and highlight the brave souls that confront it every day. Join us as we work together to bring justice to every victim. Welcome to All Things Crime. Here's your host, Jared Bradley.
Hey, everybody, it's Jared. Welcome back to another episode of All Things Crime. Appreciate you subscribing and hitting that bell for so you never miss an episode. You're definitely going to want to not only watch, you know, every episode that we talk about today, but every, you know, we have so much good stuff out there. We're talking about everything from O.J. Simpson all the way to cold cases. And but this morning I have a couple of gentlemen here that these guys are renowned for being friendly and being exceptionally, well, they never speak their minds, especially being from New York. So I just want to welcome Tom Smith and Dan Murphy from the Gold Shields podcast. So, you know, while we're here, make sure to swing over to, you know, when the show's over, of course, not right now, but go over and subscribe to the Gold Shields. So these guys are retired NYPD detectives. So you know that it's going to be an amazing show. So guys, welcome.
Thank you so much, Jared. Thank you.
Yeah, it's an honor to be here with you. Thank you. It was great meeting you recently, too. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. So just give everybody a little history. We were down in Fort Worth, Texas, which is always a treat, at least when it's not in the middle of summer, right?
Yep.
And we were at the National Law Enforcement Officer Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And Tom, you know, congratulations again for that Lifetime Achievement Award. And I definitely want to talk about that for a little bit. But man, what a great ceremony that was. The music was amazing. In fact, I've kind of reached out. What's that? Dave
Wright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, that he can sing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He is really, really good. So I've actually, my sister and my brother-in-law run this, it's called Highway 30 Music Fest. And it's like a 4-day festival. It started in Idaho, where I grew up, by the way, Dan. That's, you know, you said you had that little stint in Boise. Mm-hmm. I grew up about an hour and a half east of there. So, but anyway, my sister and brother-in-law run this music fest called Highway 30. And I referred him to them. So hopefully they can get them together. And it's just four days of just rocking nonstop music for, I think they start at like 10 or 11 in the morning and go till midnight. And
wow,
it's just endless bands. Yeah. If you guys like music, and it's kind of a mix between country, and they've got all sorts of, you know, all the way to hard rock. So good stuff. Anyway, that's a little tangent there for you. Mm-hmm. Has nothing to do with true crime, but
where do they hold that festival? Where is that, Jared?
Well, there's two of them now, actually. There's one that's in the Fort Worth area that I think is in October. And then the one up in Filer, Idaho is in June. So yeah, it's coming up quick. So if you guys are, or anybody out there, Highway 30 Music Fest, I went last year for the first time. They've been doing this 10 years now. So this will be their 11th year. And man, it's a fun time. It's a really fun time. So
very cool.
Yeah. Well, guys, so we met down in Fort Worth and you were down there being basically honored, Tom. And Dan, I know you're right alongside him. You've also received awards from the Hall of Fame, right?
No, I'm not a Hall of Fame member. No, I'm not nearly as important as Tom. Tom is Tom's a guy that's had a real career. Me, I sat in offices. I wrote a lot of good reports. I was a really good report writer as a cop. That's all I did. I wrote a couple of tickets once. I got a story about that boy. It was harrowing.
Yeah, yeah, that's
yeah. Ticket. Lucky I survived it. Yep.
Yeah. That- Broken tail light, I'll bet.
The one time his pen didn't run out of ink while he was
yeah,
writing.
Yeah.
It worked out. No, listen, Dan, you know, Dan is humble as anyone I know. His career is amazing. The cases that he worked on, you know, we did a couple of shows once. We highlighted a case each that we did on Gold Shields because, you know, we focused on our guests, but we said, you know what, let's do this. And he told a story about a kidnapping murder case, the King of Clubs case that he ran, that I've heard numerous times. And when I hear it, I still get a chill and a, oh my God, of what he did. And I would love to, you know, have you just do a show on that, because that show is, the case is incredible.
Well, but, shoot, you know, Tom, you know, that's the teaser of the day right there. Dan, why don't you just give us the gist of that case?
Well, thank you, Tom. First of all, I appreciate that you guys would find the case interesting. Please understand, it's a group effort. I worked with a lot of people on this case, and I did a lot of work on it, yes. And I was very proud of the outcome on behalf of the victims, but it's a group effort. Never, you know, anybody who works any kind of investigative cases will tell you, very rare is the one that you do alone. And this is one that was a big group effort. This specific case was, when I was in the major case squad as detective, one of our basic mandates was any ransom kidnapping in New York City, we handled. Unless it was reported to the FBI, it was our purview, no matter where in the city it was. So we were citywide. We had a period of time in the 90s when I was there where we were averaging 55 to 60 kidnappings for ransom a year. Now, that may sound like a lot to people. That is a lot. And they are busy, complex cases, and individuals being held against their will, duct taped, beaten, raped, deprived of food, their families being pressured to family and loved ones pressured to come up with ransom. And certain ethnic communities within the city tended to have a rash of them. The I'll call it illegal alien Chinese world of alien smuggling in New York City, of human trafficking, was rife for this. And the individuals that were preying on these poor people were the people who were also making money off them by extorting their businesses, by charging them exorbitant amounts of money to come here. It was really, really a tough time to be a very poor person trying to make it in America from China. So we had one specific case. We worked so many of them, but we had one specific case that started with two separate kidnappings being reported to us. So two separate detectives each had the case of a family calling and saying, we don't have the money for ransom. We have to come to the police. Our loved one has been taken by somebody. And there was not much more information because there was no information coming into the family in America. So the cases were stagnant for a couple of days. It was nothing to work off of. We didn't know where the victim was. We didn't know much about it at all. I actually remember going away for Labor Day weekend. It was 1995, Labor Day weekend. Went away with my family out to the eastern end of Long Island to Montauk with some friends. And this is the time before cell phones being prevalent and beepers were the thing. And so I had a beeper, and it was not uncommon to get beeped in the middle of the night or whatever. As a kidnapping, come in, you're up. But I remember being out there for the weekend, and it's, I think, Sunday or Monday, driving back in, because I lived on the other end. I lived up near West Point. So driving back in with my family, as soon as I get into beeper range, my beeper is going off like crazy. And it's call the office, 911 right away. You know, I find a payphone. This is the era of payphones. I call the office. I find out that everything blew up. Everything blew up. And here's what happened in a nutshell. It turns out that one specific offshoot of what's called the Fukinese Flying Dragons, which was a newer, more violent group of flying dragons that had come from the Fujian province of China than the traditional American-born Chinese flying dragons in Chinatown, if that makes any sense. They were the more violent upstart group. An offshoot of them had done three kidnappings, our two and another one. And they were holding all three of these individuals together in a basement apartment in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn. They're holding them and they're calling the family for ransom and they're calling China, because they're calling family in China so that their cohorts in China can go meet these guys and pay them the ransom there. So that way we don't arrest them at a ransom drop, which was very common. We were almost batting 1,000. If you asked for a ransom and you had to expose yourself to show up to get it, we would grab you and the case would be closed. Free the victim, all that stuff. We were pretty good at it. Well, turns out that these guys, these gang members who were abusing these two females and one male for 3 days and making them do unspeakable things I will not say on any family type of show. Just horrific abuse they put these people through. One of the family members flat out said, one of the women, her family said, they just don't have the money. Well, that was a death sentence for her. They decided to kill her several different ways. They crushed her skull in with a television set. They slit her throat. They strangled her and they tied a plastic bag around her head so she couldn't get any air. And then they hung her from a weight bench. They had like this exercise bench. They hung her from it, dead. And this is in a small apartment. And on the floor right next to her is another female victim who they wrapped up in duct tape like a cocoon. She couldn't move. They took the guy that they had and they said, okay, to the woman that's alive, we're going to go out now. We're going to go partying. We're going to shoot him and kill him. We're going to go partying. We're going to come back. See the clock? In a few hours at this time, we're going to come back and kill you. So they leave. She realizes, I have to do something or I'm dead. These guys obviously are killers. I got the proof 6 inches away from me. So she manages to worm her body in such a way that she moves, and she gets herself over to a stove, manages to get her head up, and with her teeth turns on the stove and gets a flame. She then manages to go over and get a newspaper because they're all reading the Chinese newspapers. They all want to see if there's any coverage of that, this kidnapping and all this stuff. And she takes the newspaper and throws it on top, and it starts a small fire. But it's enough for the smoke to go out through an open window and alert people in the neighborhood there's fire in the basement. 911 call comes in. Fire department breaks in. In through the smoke, they see the crime scene. Police get called. At the same time, about a half an hour drive away at the Nassau County, Queens border, these perpetrators had the male victim in the car. They pulled off a highway, and they just pulled off like onto the side of the road and brought this guy down a ravine and shot him in the head. Problem is, the bullet hit his cranial, traveled around, didn't enter, didn't kill him, gave him a concussion, gave him a big headache, but didn't kill him. So they left thinking he's dead. He wakes up dazed, walks out into traffic, and causes a multi-vehicle accident without getting killed, which is a miracle. All this starts to unfold. The first arriving cops, interpreters, what happened? I was kidnapped. Where? I was in Brooklyn with this and that. As soon as they say I was kidnapped, they call our squad because we hadn't law kidnappings. We got a guy here, says he was, yeah, we have a case on him. And they go, same thing in Brooklyn. This looks like a kidnapping situation. A woman says we were held, all this stuff. Everything starts unraveling. I get told, you know, get your butt out to Long Island Jewish Hospital now, because I was doing a RICO case on the Fukunese Flying Dragons at the time. And I had hundreds of photographs of known members of the gang, associates, all of it. And I had a reasonably encyclopedic knowledge of who they were and what they did and how they did it, where they hung out, all that stuff. So I go to the hospital. I start showing this guy. He's a bit of a mess. He identifies one person who, as it turns out, was an informant of mine who wasn't involved, but I brought him in anyway. Make a long story short, we start a full-throttle investigation in conjunction with Detective Squad, Brooklyn South Homicide Squad, and the Major K Squad. We're going to find these guys. What they did, though, to the woman they killed, in a little bit of a way of giving us the finger, was they wrote on a note in Chinese, you'll never catch us, the white devil, us, you're not smart enough, we'll out-trick you, we'll do what we want kind of thing. They took a King of Clubs playing card and that note, stuffed it down her shirt, her blood-soaked shirt, and it was found. Well, the local newspapers picked up on this and it became the King of Clubs murder. Now, they said in their note that the King of Clubs, the club itself, was a key to their identity, a clue. It turned out they called themselves the Plum Flower Boys. And plum flowers apparently look like a club on a playing club. We figured this out because we had some Chinese detectives that we worked with who were pretty knowledgeable in the language, etc. And so now we had an idea what the crew called itself. Didn't have full IDs on any of them, though. I had never heard of them before. So we're working our tails off for days, trying to figure out crime scene evidence, trying to go through numbers and information. And then we get a call from the FBI in Seattle. Turns out that when they grabbed when our perps grabbed the victims, at the same time in Seattle, the FBI had a case reported to them. Chinese case, victims grabbed, same similar circumstances in MO. And at the time, there was a thing called international calling cards. If you had an AT&T calling card, you had like a 16, or it was like a VIN number, and that was unique to your account, and you could put $100 on the card, and you could call anywhere around the world, and it would give you whatever time it gave you. These guys used the same calling card numbers in New York and Seattle to call victims' families in China. The FBI had figured that out by tracing the numbers, and they saw there was calls to New York, and we said, yeah, we have a kidnapping too. So we know our crews are related. They had made two arrests out in Seattle. Myself and another detective, our captain, looks at us and goes, what are you doing here? And that's how the NYPD works. Why aren't you on a plane right now going to Seattle? So we took off with the clothes on our back to the airport, flew out to Seattle, managed to talk to the FBI out there and get a chance to talk to these two individuals in the federal lockup. They didn't give us much, but it was a place to start. We come back, and it's no more than a day or two later of additional investigation before a detective named Bill Oldham, who I worked with, who was very, very well-versed in the Asian crime world, he looks at me and he goes, they're in L.A. I said, how do you know they're in L.A.? He goes, they're in L.A. That was by Bill's way. I said, okay, how do you know they're in L.A.? They're in my snitch's apartment. He had informants everywhere. He had an informant that was living in L.A. that these guys beat feet out of New York and went to L.A. because of the heavy press on the case, and they're staying in the informant's apartment. They're bragging about the case the whole bit. So, again, my captain looks at us with that same look. What are you doing here?
Back on a plane. Did he let you go change clothes first? Or?
Yeah, I actually had Joe Pereno, who's a sergeant, great guy, actually met me at the airport with a bag from my wife. It was crazy. It was like a baton relay. Here's a bag with some fresh underwear and jeans and stuff. Just go. So we literally jumped on a plane, flew out to L.A. In the middle of the night, we start our investigation with the local cops. We walk into, I think it was the Monterey Park Police Department, about 3 o'clock in the morning. And, we haven't slept 4 hours a night for the past 5 or 6 nights. And we look at the desk lieutenant and go, he goes, who are you guys? We tell him, he goes, what are you doing here? We tell him, he goes, really? Yeah, we're looking for a bunch of killers out here, and we figured we'd start here. So basically, we spent the next several days running down every lead we could until we got information. They had left the snitch's apartment. They went someplace else. We ended up finding them. We get to this apartment, and it's a little Melrose Place-style apartment, like those California with the pool in the middle, and everything looks like, it looks like a motel, right? You walk up, everything's open air. These guys are staying in this little place, and we go there with, I think it's the L.A. County Sheriffs, and they were great. They backed us up like crazy, and we went there and basically knocked on a door and this apartment, and all we hear out the back window is crash. One guy jumps through the window to get out of the apartment desperately, falls into a tree, hits the ground, compound fracture of his leg. It was a third-story apartment. The L.A. Sheriff's guys grab him. The other guy's not opening the door. We put a foot through the door. And this guy's sitting on the floor. There's two guys in the apartment. There was a total of 5 purpose, but only 2 in the apartment. This guy's sitting on the floor looking at all the ID of all 17 victims that they had ever done this to. They kept their ID, which gave us a roadmap for prosecuting them for all 17 kidnappings, which is what we did. But this guy's got them all laid out on the floor. I come through the door. Now, I haven't slept much. I'm 6'2", 6'3". At the time, I was about 210. I was pissed. I'm like, I haven't been home. And this guy gets up, and he does, like, the crane. You ever see that from the Karate Kid? He does, like, the kung fu stance. He's about 5'4", 120 pounds. He's going to kung fu me. It didn't work. Oddly enough, my size worked in my favor. So we arrest these two knuckleheads. We bring in all this evidence, and now we know we got 3 missing. There's hot food on the stove. There's clothes for other people. We just missed those guys. Turns out later on we found out they drove by and saw all our cars. They went out to get booze and cigarettes, and they left these two guys there, and they saw it, and then they beat feet. They took off. So now we got to get the other 3. How do we get them? We start looking through beepers. We start looking through little black books, information pads. We get all this information. We figure out a number that looks, based upon everything we know about looking at how they categorize numbers in their phone and everything, this looks like a good one. So we set up a dummy number. We had our technical assistance response unit, which at the time was great, and they still are great with phones, set up a dummy phone number with a Chinatown, New York extension, so that any call that came into it, we'd immediately dump and trace to wherever it came from. We start beeping these numbers, and we put in the codes, 888-911-888. 8 is good luck, fortune, financially in their world, 911 immediately, and that's what these gang members did. When they had money to be made right away, call that number right away. They called back, and they called back from the Super 8, again, Super 8, lucky number, motel in a city called Milpitas, California, outside San Jose, which was a several-hour flight north, 400 and something miles. So next thing you know, we're on a commuter flight at like 6:30 in the morning up there. Milpitas Police Department is surrounding this hotel. Long story short, we end up getting into the hotel and grabbing these three guys. One of them ran to the back, into the bathroom, closed the door, and I still laugh about that. You got like 20 heavily armed SWAT guys hitting your door, and you run into the back bathroom to hide. You know, it's funny what people do when they're under pressure.
Thanks for joining us. Your attention today brings us one step closer to exposing and eliminating the evil that brings crime to our communities. Hit subscribe and share this episode. Together, we will bring justice to every victim.